This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest. I'm Sharmila Ganesan and together with me is Dashran Johan. So before we get into today's show, just a quick reminder. If you've ever wondered how dating works when we're being told to avoid touch or physical contact where possible, or whether spending so much time at home together helps or hurts a couple's sex life, well, our Health and Living webinar is happening today and we'll be discussing issues related to sex and intimacy in the time of COVID-19. Join our conversation with the experts on BFM's Facebook Live today from 3 to 3:30 p.m. For more information, go to bfm.my/health event. This series is presented by AIA, enabling healthier, longer, better lives. So now on with today's show, we have today we'll be talking about I need to recuperate from that very exciting webinar that I just talked about. But yes, on the July 28th parliamentary sitting, YB Syed Saddiq talked about the need to reform our country's drug policies and to move towards decriminalizing drugs for personal use. So we'll be discussing today why it's important to decriminalize drugs for personal use.
Right. And on that note, you know, if you'd like to send us your thoughts or join the conversation that we will be having, you can tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
Yep. Now on to the story.
So, as Sharmila mentioned earlier, during the July 28th parliamentary sitting, former Youth and Sports Minister YB Syed Saddiq asked the MP from Gerai, who is of the PAS party, if he agrees with the proposed method of resolving the drug problem in which, and I'm going to quote, "we do not punish but decriminalize drug addiction and instead use an alternative method, which is to focus on rehabilitation so that when the youth makes a mistake, he isn't punished forever." Because, you know, Syed Saddiq goes on to say that when they have a criminal record, they can't get a job and will be stigmatized for 20 to 30 years. And following this, the Gerai MP agreed.
So this is on top of what Syed Saddiq said at last week's parliamentary sitting, where he said, and I'm quoting, "it is time for us to decriminalize drug addiction, especially when most of those who serve time in prison are first-time drug offenders involving youngsters. With that, it will be hard for them to get a job. They will be stigmatized by society and family. Lastly, that youth would likely return to drugs again."
And the Moore MP also cited Portugal as an example. So Portugal was the first country in the world to decriminalize all forms of drug consumption. And this was way back in 2001. And Syed Saddiq said that now drug addiction rates in Portugal were more than 5 times lower than other European countries. And Syed Saddiq is right here, because since Portugal took what many at the time considered a radical move, the drug-induced death rate in the country has plummeted to 5 times lower than the EU, EU in average, and even is 1/50th of the United States average, which is quite a big margin. And according to Time, Portugal's rate of HIV infection has dropped from 104.2 new cases per million in 2000 to 4.2 cases per million in 2015.
Oh, that's a huge drop.
It is. Yeah. And drug use has declined overall among the 15 to 24-year-old population as well.
And Syed Saddiq also pointed out that we need to use compassion to help the youth, and that a scientific approach is far better than the policy to punish. But this isn't a brand new notion that has been discussed and debated in Malaysia. You know, former Health Minister Dr. Zulkifli Ahmad, during the former Pakatan Harapan administration, said last January that the government plans to decriminalize drug addiction.
And YB Nurul Izzah Anwar is also someone who has been pushing hard for there to be major reforms in Malaysian drug laws. In a piece he wrote for The Star back in 2019, Nurul Izzah said there were reportedly more than 23,000 people who were dependent on drugs in Malaysia. And by 2016, this had risen to more than 30,000. And by 2017, a total of 163,931 drug-related arrests were made And, you know, this ended up clogging up our prison. This has created a subset of Malaysians who have been incarcerated for what is basically a health condition, namely addiction. A report by Astro Awani from June 14, 2017 also noted that 33,500 out of the 59,600 convicts in the country at the time were in prison because of drug offences. And this makes up 56% out of the total number of inmates nationwide.
So it would seem that the war on drugs has been failing in Malaysia, as is the case with many countries around the world. So what can we do? Is decriminalizing drugs the answer? So to help us dig a little deeper, we do have on the line Samantha Chong, who's a lawyer and a drug policy reform advocate. Hi, Samantha. Thank you for joining us. So firstly, let's start with, has the criminalization of drugs proven to be an effective method of curbing drug use among Malaysians?
The war on drugs has not been proven to be effective. Indeed, it has still many other social problems. When we deal, when we use fear to curb other crime, it might be effective if you couple it with enforcement. But looking at drug addiction as a medical problem, it is not a good response or effective response towards addiction. UNODC World Drug Report has stated very clearly that only about 1 out of 10 people that use drugs actually need treatment, but 1 out of 6 people are getting treatment. So if war on drugs are focusing on punishing people who use drugs, who has addiction problems, that's not going to solve the problem, because these people, they need rehabilitations and treatment, which we are not giving them. In the older generations, heroin are among the most popular drugs, whereby you can see if a person is addicted to drugs, there will be withdrawal symptoms and whatsoever. But now, synthetic drugs like methamphetamines are the popular one. They don't have the symptoms of heroin. You can see the withdrawal, cold sweat, whatsoever. These are more to psychological. And using a 1952 Dangerous Drug Act, a law that is so outdated to deal with all this new situation, is just not working. And we see more and more young people getting involved in drug addiction. And our laws are not doing anything, but it is even more harmful than the drug itself. Because imagine if you are caught, you are convicted, you will have drug, you will have a criminal convictions, which make getting a proper education and stable employment difficult, which will not break the addiction cycle. But instead, if you drive them further into drugs and other crime-related issues. So I would say that criminalization of drug use is not effective at all, but it is very, very harmful.
So what do you think are some of the major issues with the drug laws in Malaysia?
So our drug laws are based on international conventions. So Malaysia has ratified it, and we have to incorporate into our domestic law. So all these laws are based on prohibition, which they think that there's no supply, there's no demand, which is not true in drug addiction cases. When I had my training in Ukraine, so the experts show us when there's no more drugs in the market, they made it themselves with materials available in the kitchen. And these self-made drugs are even more harmful than the drugs they normally get in the market. So among other major issues with our drug law is the Drug Dependence Act, Treatment and Rehabilitations. So if you volunteer yourself or you are being asked by the magistrate to go to a compulsory rehabilitation treatment in Pusat Serenti, you will have a criminal record. And medical practitioners, by law, have to inform the authority if somebody seeks treatment with them for drug-dependent treatment. So these people will have to be registered. And this is one of the obstacles for people to get treatment. They are afraid to get treatment. So our laws need to be revised to suit the current drug addiction science developments.
Okay, and just a quick follow-up to that. The law also does not differentiate people who use drugs experimentally, recreationally, for self-medication or chronic use, right?
Correct. What you say is absolutely right, whereby our Dangerous Drug Act doesn't differentiate what type of user they are. It's a one-size-fits-all solution. Just put them in prison, just give them a fine, lock them up in possessory. We have to understand that not, I know this is a bit, people will push back, but not all people who use drugs will be addicted to drugs. So UNODC reports reveal that most people who have, who are problematic drug user often have past history like trauma, or they have mental health issues, or they were abused before. And this is the underlying factors that lead them into drug addiction. If we just put that in the prison, we make no difference. We don't ask, why do you use drugs? It doesn't solve the problem. In my many people that I know, they use drugs to self-medicate physical pain or psychological pain. And if in US, you look at the opiate pandemic, the crisis, is actually fueled by a lot of misuse of the painkiller Oxycontin. So what is legal painkiller? What is not? Do we define it? How do we differentiate it? I think this is what we should think about it. I mean, why people use drugs?
And does the current prison system help in rehabilitating someone?
So when we talk about prison rehabilitating someone, I will explain it from the drug policy context. So our prison population is about 52,000 for the whole Malaysia. But in December 2019, the number is about 74,000 people serving time. So it means that 25 out of 38 prison in Malaysia is actually, they are overcrowded. And if we look at drug addiction, it is a medical problem. Prison wardens are not trained to deal with treatment or rehabilitation. It is the medical practitioner's job. So by locking these people out, we lock this problem up temporarily. But does it mean that there's no drug in the prison? In January 2019, Johor Police actually busted a prison drug ring. So it doesn't solve the problem. And it actually exposes the community to infectious diseases like latent TB and COVID-19. So there was research done by UC Malaya whereby the research revealed that about 89% of the inmates have latent TB, inactive TB, and 83% of the prison staff have it. Imagine these people bringing the bacteria, the virus to their families, the communities. So prison health is community health. So we are not doing a community a favor by locking these people in the prison, but we should give them community evidence-based treatment instead of putting them in prison. So I would say that putting people in prison for drug offenses doesn't help these people, because when I'm in court, I see the same faces getting into trouble because of drugs many, many times. So it's not effective at all.
So, with that in mind, is decriminalization of drugs the solution?
So, when we talk about decriminalization, we often get a lot of backlash. Decriminalization doesn't mean legalization, or it doesn't mean that you can just simply light cannabis in the mama store. No. When we talk about decriminalization in the drug policy context, it refers to the removal of criminal penalties. So it means that you don't get imprisonment or criminal penalty fines or criminal records for using it. But there are other responses. For example, referring this person to a counseling for evidence-based treatment. So it's not liberalization that we are talking about. So whether it is the solution, I don't think that should be... decriminalization is the magic pill or whatsoever. It has to come hand in hand with upskilling of evidence-based treatment and rehabilitation counseling program orders. It has to come as a package. So by decriminalizing, removing the criminal penalties, we need to divert those who have problematic drug use to equal response, evidence-based treatment. We need to find out what are the underlying factors, depression, PTSD, to help them break the cycle of addiction. So it's not the magic bullet, but it is definitely important to have evidence-based drug policy.
Mm. And we talk about decriminalization, but does Malaysia have the infrastructure in place to help drug users if we move forward with the proposed decriminalization?
Indeed, in Malaysia, we did try in 2006-2007. We have ADK has transformed from compulsory rehabilitation center to voluntary. There's a few clinics and we see very, very good results whereby the treatment has gone up, the criminal retention has gone up as well. People are willing to go to get treatment. And there's an SOP between Bukit Aman and KKM that there shouldn't be any an operation among the clinic or the NSEP sites. They shouldn't arrest these people for when they are around the NSEP sites. So we can see a lot of statistics and studies support that when you don't arrest people, you don't punish them, but you refer them for evidence-based treatment, it helps a lot. And we see for the first time the arrest of repeated drug user going down. It is in the AADK's statistic. Indeed, AADK has offices in all the districts in the whole Malaysia. I would say that we have the infrastructures to run it. We have the fund to do it. As long as we don't put people in prison, we divert the fund to treatment and rehabilitation. But what we need is the political will, the support of the communities to change our law, to shift from punitive to supporting these people to go for treatment if they need it.
So when drug reform is brought up, people do seem to use different terminology. Sometimes they say decriminalizing drug addiction. And then sometimes that same person would also say decriminalize possession of drugs for personal use. Are these terms interchangeable?
I think when they talk about decriminalizing drug addictions, what they mean is that you won't be arrested if they found that you have been using drugs, that your urine is positive for certain drugs. But you have certain small amount of drugs in your possession, you still be punished. Because I understand their point is that if we allow people to carry small amount of drugs, we will actually encourage drug trafficking. Now, drug trafficker can then pack drugs in small amounts so that they won't be arrested. But thinking from the perspective of a smoker, cigarettes. So now I will not punish you for smoking, but if you are found to have cigarettes, I will arrest you and I'll punish you. Almost all the smokers, they will carry a certain of cigarettes with them, maybe a box, maybe 3-4, just a little bit. But they will not carry the whole carton. When they carry the whole carton, you know that they want to sell cigarettes. So, and quitting smoking, is not easy. So there's drugs using. When you decriminalize drug use, but not drug, not possession for small amount for personal usage, it will create a lot of problem. Because nowadays we see people are arrested for both drug use and possession. And in courts, they are sentenced concurrently. So for 3 months drug use, 3 months drug possession. So if they just decriminalize drug use, but not drug possession, same person will also serve for 3 months. So the problem we face with war on drugs will still be there. We are not solving any problem.
So I'm going to play devil's advocate here, right? People who do push back against decriminalization of drugs, they say that individuals with a predisposition towards addiction may be more likely to experiment if they do not fear legal prosecution. So what are your thoughts on this?
I would say that scare tactic is never a very good deterrent because people use drugs for many, many reasons. When we talk about the problematic drug use, we think of the crime and the social problems and the health problems brought by it. So, okay, say not everybody that use drugs will be addicted to drugs. And I think we should focus on how do you respond to problematic drug use and an evidence-based prevention campaign. So why kids use drugs? Because they are curious. They don't have anything else to do, so they follow their friends and experiment new things. There's an experiment done by a Canadian scientist whereby he put a single lonely mouse in the enclosure. He put two types of water, morphine water and the normal water. As times go by, this lab rat get very depressed. So the lab rat just take the morphine's water and he get addicted. And on the other side, there's a happy garden for a lot of lab rats. So they put toys, they put food, they have friends. They also put morphine water and the normal water. But all these lab rats in the happy garden, they don't take the morphine water. They are happy. They have things to do. They have friends. They have the support. They have love from family and friends. They do not need to use drugs, morphine water. So when they put this lab rat that is addicted to morphine into this happy garden, in the beginning, this addicted lab rat still take the morphine water. But as times go by, he has friends. He has toys to play. He stopped taking the morphine water. He would just take the normal water. From this experiment, we can see that if we do not have the support from the family, friends, and communities, and we don't give kids meaningful things to do, they will resort to drug use and other activities. The more evidence been effective way of preventing drug is not through law, but is to give people meaning and things to do than just putting them in prison and scare tactics.
Thank you, Samantha. That was Samantha Chong, a lawyer and drug policy reform advocate.
And it's currently unclear if the Perikatan National Government will follow through with Pakatan's plan to decriminalize drug possession for personal use. So I guess you'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, and we'll definitely bring you updates as and when we know. But that's all the time we have for that story. But if you have thoughts that you'd like to share with us or your opinion on this issue, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or write to us on Facebook. We are BFM The Bigger Picture. So that's all from us today on The Daily Digest. If you've missed any part of the show, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my/dailydigest, on the BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on By the Book, Lynn and I will be doing a review of J.K. Rowling's latest children's book, The Ichabod. So that's it from us. We'll leave you now with The Prince by Madness on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.